We are in Perek Yudchet, chapter 18. Last week we introduced the chapter, and that was there was a lot there. We talked about Shaul's decline. We talked about the love of David, or the loves of David, and we talked about the rebellion of younger generations against their elders. I want to come back to three points that I didn't address then, that I think are worth mentioning before we go forward. The main topic for today is going to be Yehonatan and David and their relationship. So we're going to spend a lot of time on that. But before we start all of that, just wanted to dedicate the learning today for a refuah shlema for Yoel ben Gittel Fega. So you should have a refuah shlema. Okay, so three notes, as I said, from what we discussed last week regarding the loves of David. First of all, something that I had thought about in the past but didn't mention last week, and then I read an article that happened to make mention of it and realized I hadn't said anything about it last week. What does the name David mean?
Beloved.
Beloved, correct. Shoshana is right. David itself, like Dode, right, is beloved. When we use the term dod for an uncle, or doda for an aunt, it means beloved. That's where it comes from. Av and aim means source. That's for father and mother. And dod and doda are terms for being beloved. The name Yedid or Yedidya from the same Shoresh, it's from the same root. I like to point this out always. Susan, I see you look perplexed. Just one moment. I like to point this out in the context of a Gemara in Psachim. The Gemara there talks about the relationship between the sages Rav and Rabbi Chiya. And Rav calls Rabbi Chiya Chavivi. Chaviv, of course, also means beloved. And he calls him Chavivi because he is a double uncle. Because of step relationships, he's actually the uncle on both the father's side and the mother's side. So he's known as a Chaviv, he's a double uncle. But a regular uncle is also beloved, and that's what Dod means. So, referring back now to David, who has all of these relationships in which people love him, he has, as we said last time, Yehonatan. He has Shaul, first of all, who is seen as loving him. But then he has Yehonatan, and then he has Michal, and then Yehuda and Yisrael. They all love David. He has the name Beloved, right? The only person who doesn't seem to love David is Eliyav. But again, I'm trying to redeem Eliyav on that score. Susan, question? Av and aim both mean source. In different ways, but they both mean source.
They're the source of our birth?
Yeah, they're the source of the person's life, yeah. They, when we talk about in halacha, avot melacha are central categories of work you're not supposed to do on Shabbos, and they have toladot, descendant forms. It comes up in other areas of law, but Shabbos is the one that's most familiar to people. We're going to come back to that. That's going to be in today's class, so we'll get there. But that's number one. But the answer to what you're about to ask is no. But we'll come back to that. The second point that I wanted to note here was I asked a question last time that I didn't have an answer for. And that was that I had mentioned there was one other party in Tanakh described as loving David, and that was King Hiram, right, who goes to Shlomo to help build the temple, to build the Beis HaMikdash, and he says, I always loved your father. And I was really bothered about that one. This person is described as loving David. How does that fit? Who is Hiram to love David? So I read a paper last week, and I thank Rabbi Ziering for sending this my way. He told me he's been listening to the Shmuel classes, and he recommended this paper, which I'm going to refer you to on the sheet. Actually, it's going to be in source number one on the sheet, so you can see it there, and I gave you a website where you could find it online. It's called When Love and Politics Mix by Rabbi Dr. Chaim Angel. So he says in that article that love, the term ahava, as we use it in Hebrew, can also refer to a political relationship, which is what it would be in the case of Hiram. I'd like to see more about that. I'd like to see other cases in Tanakh where that shows up in order to really justify that, but that's what he says. I think it's certainly an interesting idea. And then the last note that I wanted to add to what we said last week is also something from Rabbi Angel, which I hear I brought it for you on the sheet as source number one. I believe we mentioned last time that David is not described as reciprocating in these cases of love, right? We talked about that last time. They love, you know, Yehonatan loves David, Michal loves David. We don't find it stated that David loves them back. And we're going to come back to that with each relationship to discuss that in greater depth. So does that mean that he doesn't love them? Is that really what it means? So Rabbi Angel himself, in discussing this, notes that we don't always see full descriptions of relationships in Tanakh. So, as a matter of fact, the norm is not to see full descriptions of relationships. So maybe it says they loved him because it relates to the story, but it doesn't mention his love for them. I find that less than convincing. Chana?
I think that the fact that they have a great makes it reciprocal. So what one feels, the other feels.
So
in that respect, because they had a great, I think that with Jonathan, it's a hint that he did love them.
So that's possible. To suggest, Chana says, the fact that we're going to see them have a brit suggests it's reciprocal, but I'm going to come back to discuss that when we talk about David and Yehonatan. There's a lot more to say about that brit. But Rabbi Angel offers the following idea, which I think is more potent in terms of reflecting on love in Tanakh and the relationships that David has. Take a look, please, at source number one on your sheet. Again, this is Rabbi Angel's article, When Love and Politics Mix. It originally appeared in Jewish Bible Quarterly, but the website I gave you there that has it is his father's website, Rabbi Mark Angel, jewishideas.org, so he puts the article there. Susan Ackerman has observed that in most biblical relationships involving the term ahava, love, only one of the parties is explicitly said to love. The Song of Songs is a notable exception. In other words, when you see in Tanakh, in general, love between individuals, it's always X loves Y and not Y loves X. Generally, husbands are said to love their wives without explicit mention that the wives love the husbands. So I should have said Y loves X and not X loves Y. That really would have been the more accurate rendition. The parents are said to love their children without explicit mention that their children love them. I'm going to leave that one to you to fill in. There's a lot of literature on that one. For example, Isaac is said to have loved Rebecca, Jacob loved Rachel, Samson loved Delilah, and Elkanah loved Hannah. Rebecca is said to have loved Jacob while Isaac loved Esav, and Jacob loved Joseph and Benjamin. But you don't get the reversals. I thought that was a really interesting point that Ackerman is making. For those who want to look for Ackerman's article, I gave you the reference in the footnote 3 at the bottom of 1. I couldn't find it available freely online, though. Therefore, the omission of references to... I'm sorry, I jumped. Ackerman maintains that generally the more dominant party is said to love, even though the loving relationship may well be reciprocal. So that normally you're going to see the parent expressed as loving the child and the husband expressed as loving the wife. Of course, we've seen that Michal is described as loving David, but it makes sense that she would be considered the dominant one in the relationship. Certainly at the outset, she's the daughter of the king. Therefore, the omission of references to David's loving Saul, Jonathan, or Michal does not necessarily indicate any lack of love from David toward these characters. In fact, it would have been surprising had there been explicit reference to David's love, because as we said, Tanakh doesn't give you an expression of it both ways, even if both feel love for each other. It's just not the way that Tanakh expresses it. You follow?
Hi.
Yes, Jeanette.
A question. I haven't gone through it with a fine tooth comb, but it appears that also when I'm looking at all, thinking about all these people, where it says one loves the other and the other, it doesn't say reciprocal, they seem to always be in a situation of a choice. In other words, it'll say that the husband loves a wife when there are two wives. It'll say that a parent loves a child when there are multiple children. I'm wondering if that follows through, and maybe the idea of Yehonatan loving David in the context that he chooses David above his father.
Interesting. It's a very interesting idea. It doesn't work with all of them. Isaac loving Rebecca, there's no one else. And when Jacob is described as loving Rachel, there is no one else at that stage. That's before he's married Leah. Right? So it doesn't always work. Shimshon loves Delilah at a time when he's not in a relationship, as far as we know, with anybody else. But it's an idea. I'll tell you why I like the idea, because, and I see your hand, Leona. I like the idea because, in Parshas Ki Tetzé, we talk about the case in which a man has two wives, and he prefers one over the other, and then he wants to give the primary inheritance to the children of the one he has greater affection for, and they're described as ahuva and sinua, and we make the point that it's actually relative rather than objective. So I wonder about what you're saying. It doesn't fit for all the examples we're seeing here, but it's something to keep in mind for sure. Leona, you were going to say.
Perhaps David really does love Yonatan. But if I recall, at the end of his eulogy for him, he says, Na'amta li ma'ot. He doesn't say, and then he says, Ahavtacha yoter tov li minashim. So your love was more to me than women, but I found you very pleasant. There's an interesting.
So we are going to have to talk that through, because the pasuk about the love of Yehonatan being greater for him than the love of women can be read in two different ways. Grammatically, you can read it in two different ways, and that will affect what you just said. You chose one read, but there's an opposite read as well. So we're going to, understand, please. We're going to spend a lot of time today on David and Yehonatan, but it won't be the end of it, because this story shapes the rest of Shmuel. Directly, the rest of Shmuel Aleph, until Yonatan's death at the end, and indirectly beyond that with the relationships that come from there. Mephibosheth obviously is one of the, as an example, the son. But there's a lot to talk about. Okay. So those were just, filling in some points from last week. Let's look at David and Yehonatan now. So we're gonna go through the opening psukim Aleph through Hey. 1-5, and this read through is going to give us just the skeleton that we're going to work with. But before we see it, I want to show you source number 2. Source number 2 is the Malbim's running commentary on these verses, where he explains what he sees as the purpose of this section. Remember that, and this goes back to my answer to you last week, Susan, about when this passage takes place. This passage interweaves David's conversation with Shaul after killing Goliath with Yehonatan's reaction and interaction with David, apparently at the same time. So this is still right after the defeat of Goliath. So take a look at Malbim. He says, Yisaper ata, eich hitzmiach keren leDavid umazalo hitnotzeitz holech va'or. He says, now the story tells, the Tanakh tells, how David's power grew, as I translated. The word Keren is a word we see a lot with David. We see it elsewhere as well. It's a reference to power. So how David's power grew, how his mazal blossomed, however you want to translate mazal. But you see how David is growing in influence, David is growing in power. That's what you see in this section, and it plays out on 6 levels, which he identifies. Sorry, hang on 1 second. Number 1, he says, Mitzad Yehonatan, Shebechalotol ledaber, nikshra nefesh Yehonatan benefesh David. Number 1 is David's success in forming a relationship with Yehonatan, where he finishes speaking to Shaul, telling Shaul, Shaul asks, who's your father? And he says, my father is Yishai from Beit Lechem. When David finishes speaking, Yehonatan feels a great bond with David. And that's something that continues he's going to discuss why they feel a bond, but I'm going to have to come back to that. We're not ready for that yet. Bet, second, Mitzad Shaul. This passage talks about how David succeeds in his relationship with Shaul. Shaul plans to build for David an enduring house, right? He's going to have David marry into the family. He's going to marry the daughter of Shaul. He's doing well, David, at this point. Things with Shaul obviously don't stay well, but... And that, according to Malbim, is why we're going to read that Shaul won't let David go home. He's supposed to be the son-in-law. I don't want him going back to the sheep. There's some irony, because after Shaul became king, he went back to his animals. But not at this stage. So, in this passage, we're going to see David gain success in his relationship with Yehonatan, in his relationship with Shaul, and then Malbim comes back to Yehonatan. Mitzad Yehonatan, Shayidei Ha'ahava Hosif Lichrot Imo Brit. We're going to see a covenant created for Yehonatan and Shaul, and David, I should say. And then, Dalet, fourth, Gam Hosif Lahatzliach B'milchamto Neged Plishtim. We're going to find David succeeding as well in war against the Plishtim. And fifth, V'lachein Samau Shaul Asara Tzavai. He's going to become a general or a leading officer at any rate in the military. And then Vav, sixth, V'gam Bezos Hitzliach Shematzachein Be'enei Kol Ha'am V'gam Be'enei Avdei Shaul. We find David succeeding also, gaining the admiration and trust of the nation and of Shaul's servants. They're not upset. Hey, why is this guy ruling over us? No, they're good with it. That's the line that Gemara Pesachim associates with David. We've talked about that. The stone rejected by the builders has now become the top. I wish everybody Chodesh Tov, since we said that for Hallel this morning. But the point is that Malbim says what we're doing here is we're presenting David as his star is ascending. He's climbing here. Clear? Okay, Susan and Janine.
Maybe you're going to discuss it later, but covenant usually means an agreement.
We're getting to the covenant later.
Okay.
Thank you.
Janine. I just found it very curious that it talks us of Vayehi Kechalos, told of the Beryl Shaul. And such a funny, it doesn't say when he moved in or when he...
Because he didn't.
It sounds like the minute he saw...
Correct.
...speaking.
So we're going to get to that.
Connection.
We're going to get there. You're right. But it is immediate. That's the way it's understood. So you'll see. Let's do a basic read through. We're just going to read the psukim, then we have to come back and discuss. So, chapter 18, sentence 1. As
Can
Janine,
I just ask you a question?
Yes.
About writing in... Are you allowed to write in your books?
Yes. Yes.
Does it matter if I use pencil or pen or any of that stuff?
If you're smart, you'll use pencil. But yes, absolutely. I mean, I've given Shiram on the fact that I believe one must write in their sitter. I absolutely believe in writing in Sfarim. All my Sfarim are marked up. That's, it's, yes. For a whole host of reasons that are beyond the scope of this Shir, right. I believe that one should.
Thank you.
Not least, God willing, one day, nieces, nephews, children, grandchildren, open up the Sefer and see the thoughts that you had when you were learning it, and it will inspire them. So that's not even the most important reason, but it's sure not the least either. Okay.
I can speak now with my husband's spelling.
Yeah?
The kids look so well. Yeah.
There you go.
Yep.
Okay, Pasuk Aleph. When he finished speaking to Shaul, this is when David finished, v'nefesh Yehonatan nikshara v'nefesh David. The soul of Yehonatan was bonded with, tied to the soul of David. I'm deliberately not translating the word nefesh in a real sense, because that's a whole other discussion. Nefesh means one thing in Kabbalah, it means other things in Tanakh. It's not at all clear. Nefesh often means desire rather than soul, right? If you think of the Gemara's phrase, manafshach, means what do you want? What do you desire? I'm just leaving it as nefesh. So the nefesh of Yehonatan was bonded with or tied with the nefesh of David. Vayehavehu, Yehonatan kenafsho. And Yehonatan loved him like his own nefesh. Professor Keel in the Dot Mikra points out the word nefesh is there, even if I'm not translating it, three times in this sentence, right? The nefesh Yonasan nikshra benefesh David ve'yehavehu Yonasan kinafsho. It emphasizes, according to Professor Keel's read, the power of the bond between them. This is a life-level bond. This is not just, some kind of momentary thing or shallow thing. So, Vayikachayu Shaul Bayomahu. Shaul takes David that day. Velo nisano lashuv beis aviv. And he did not allow him to go home. He says, you're not going. Now, it's not clear from this what taking David means. He takes him where? Takes him to do what? So the Dot Mikra from Professor Keel says he's taking him to his own home. Malbim similarly says that it's to become his son-in-law, because that's the expectation as plays out in the chapter. The other possibility is that it's like what we're going to see in Pasuk Hey, in sentence 5. In sentence 5, we're going to say that Shaul makes him a warrior of his, gives him some kind of military status. So it could be he took him to make him a soldier, to make him an officer. You could legitimately read it that way, and it would make sense given that what happened first was Goliath. Right? I mean, that's what I would do if I was the king. But that's what we're told here in Pasuk Bet in sentence 2, that he takes him to his home, or he takes him to be in the military, and then we get Yehonatan. Yes, Claudette. You're gonna have to. There you go.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah. When I read this about Jonathan's love, next sentence says that Shul takes him. Is it possible that Shul recognized that David is very much like Jonathan in character?
It's an interesting possibility for sure. We're going to need to talk about the Shaul relationship and why he makes David part of his army. It's possible.
Jonathan was a very good warrior, too.
Yes.
Maybe he recognized these two young men.
You can make the argument. I hear it. I hear arguments against also. But I think a lot of this, in terms of the Shaul, Yehonatan, and David dynamic, requires that we see more, just in terms of the coming chapters and how things work between them, to try to figure out what Shaul was thinking, understanding that Shaul's mind changes over time in dramatic ways. So it's hard to read what happens in chapter 23 and assume anything about what's going on in chapter 18. So it's going to be complicated, but it's definitely an interesting idea. So, Pasuk Gimel, sentence 3. Vayichros Yehonatan v'David bris be'ahavaso oso kinafsho. Yehonatan makes a brit with David, loving him like his own nefesh. We're going to come back to talk about this brit. I don't want to talk about it right now. I don't want to ask the grammar question that I think some of you are trying to ask. I know who my grammarians are here. We'll come to it. It's a good question. Just hang in there. Pasuk Dalid. Vayispashet Yehonatan es hamiil asher alav vayitneu leDavid. Yehonatan removes the garment, or the me'il, I should say, not garment, me'il, which is an important word we have to come back to. He removes the me'il that is upon him, gives it to David, Umadav, and his uniform. Ve'ad charbo ve'ad kashto. He gives him his sword. He gives him his bow. Ve'ad chagoro. And he gives him the military belt that he wears. He's giving David a me'il, and he's giving David his armor, and he's giving David his weapons. And finally, Vayetze David b'chol asher yishlachenu Shaul yaskil. David goes out, and wherever Shaul sends him, he is successful. Vayesimehu Shaul al anshei hamilchama. Shaul puts him in charge of the warriors. Vayitav be'enei kol ha'am v'gam be'enei avdei Shaul. And he was good in the eyes of the nation, and he was good in the eyes of Shaul. Yes, Ricky.
I found the word itpashet strange. It's not the word we use for takeoff.
Right. What should it have been?
Yorid.
Okay. I would have used vayafshet instead of vayitpashet. Right.
Itpashet is a little bit...
The grammar here is definitely strange, and there's a lot here that's strange, right? Go back to Janine's question from before. I see you, Ethi. Why is this here in the middle of David's meeting with Shaul and his integration into Shaul's court and his home and his military? Why is Yonatan part of this conversation at all? Finish this story, and then tell me about the love that they have between them. It's a very odd thing. Yes, Ethi.
Itpashet means he got undressed. He got undressed from his coat, Me'il's coat, and he gave it to David.
Why wouldn't you say Vayevshot or Vayevshet, Yehonatan et Hami'il Asher Alav?
You could.
Right. So there's more to be said. We're going to come to a comment about this. Susan, yeah, and then Leona.
I'm kind of confused as to why David is playing the subservient role still, knowing he was anointed. Okay, Shaul knew he was losing his kingdom, but he may not have known to whom. But why did David, and I know Shmuel disappeared, but he went and did tell Yishai that David was going to be king. So why has all that not been played out? Why are they just waiting for the catastrophe?
So there's a problem here in that the king doesn't really want to lose his throne.
No, he never does, though, but he's going to have to.
Okay, but...
He's going along with him. I know there comes a point he doesn't. But I'm just wondering why. Let's just do it. Like, rip off the bandage and do it.
Right. And I think that's why, because it's ripping off the bandage. That's why.
I think it's because Shaul is still alive, and it's not happening during his lifetime. So
no, but Susan's question is, why doesn't Shaul himself, knowing he's going to lose the throne, why doesn't Shaul go along with it? And I think he's not interested in going along with it. He wants Hashem back. He wants his monarchy back. Leona's been waiting very patiently.
Why David doesn't fight?
And the answer is the same as when Shaul was anointed by Shmuel in the first place. He also didn't fight for it. Leona?
I'm more concerned about what Yonatan knew.
Good. We're going to come back to this one.
Okay.
We're going to come back.
That's the whole question here.
Right. Hopefully we're going to even come back to this today. It depends how far we go. But this is a very good question. What does Yehonatan know, and when does he know it? You're going to see in several chapters from now, Yehonatan say to David, I know you're going to be king, and my father knows it too. So the question is going to be, when did he find out, and how did he find out? But in terms of the Vayit Pashet, I just want to call your attention quickly to something. If you take a look at Perek Yotet, Pasuk Chaf Dalet, Chapter 19, sentence 24. The end of chapter 19, Shaul is going to go to David. We mentioned this already, I think, once before. We mentioned it when we were talking about the Hagam Shaul Banavi'im. Chapter 19, sentence 24.
Vayifshot.
Vayifshat gam hu begadav. Right? Yeah. It's talking about taking off his clothes, and it says Vayifshat. Not vayit pashet. So the question is going to be, you know, why did you use Vayit Pashet here? Vayit Shat is a perfectly serviceable word. So yeah, we're going to come to it. There's a lot here we need to understand. Let's actually go into some explanation, because the questions are fun, but the answers may help too. So I'll start with the first question. Why mention this relationship at all in the middle of talking about Shaul's relationship with David? So I'm going to offer two schools of thought. One school of thought is that the reason is because it ties into, Yehonatan ties into, the events that we just saw at the end of Perek Yud Zayin. At the end of Perek Yud Zayin, the beginning of the meeting between David and Shaul, Shaul asks him, who are you? Right? Ben Miatahanar. And David says, I am the son of Yishai of Beit Lechem. So I brought you on the sheet in source number 3, Mitsudat David, who says that's why Yehonatan loves him. Bishmoa Yehonatan Shegam Hu Ben Adam Gadol Nikshira Nafsho Benefesh David. They bond about being the sons of great people. We've said that according to almost everyone, Yishai is a great leader, granted that we did note an alternative view. And Shaul is the son, Yehonatan is the son of Shaul. And so Mitzudat David, Rabbi David Altshuler suggests that this is, that's what causes the affinity. I think that's one possibility. I think you can offer another one, and then I'll take Ricky's comment. Another idea within this same idea that Yehonatan's bond ties into what just happened, Vayiki Chaloto Ledaber, when he finished speaking then, maybe it's just that this is when things happened, and therefore we're putting it in. In other words, David comes in with the head of Goliath. Shaul says to David, who is your father? David says, my father is Yishai of Beit Lechem. And Yehonatan just swoons. Yehonatan is like, wow, this guy's great. And he immediately says, I want to make a brit with you. I want to, all these things. It just happened then. And that's why we're including it in the story. It could be that simple, but we're going to see another set of ideas. Ricky, what were you going to say?
It's not a strong enough reason, and there are a lot of people around who are of high status. You're not going to fall in love, well, emotionally, you're not going to love them just because they're of high, that's like snobism, that's like...
Right. No, I definitely hear the reason for skepticism. Let me offer you other ideas. It could be that this is a literary move. In other words, Shmuel or Gad or whoever, whichever one of the Nevi'im, we remember now we know that there are 3 Nevi'im who author this book, but Shmuel, Gad, or Natan chooses to place this here as a way to teach additional lessons. Number one, David's relationship with Yehonatan, this is my own idea, take it for what it's worth. David's relationship with Yehonatan gets in the way of Shaul's growing animosity towards David. In other words, what we're doing by putting this here is to say Shaul's relationship with David is never going to exist independent of Yehonatan's relationship with David. And that's true. I mean, that's going to play out in the chapters after this. It's going to be, you know, Shaul wants to kill David and Yehonatan is going to let David know, or he's going to stay away. And he's going to stay because of Yehonatan and put himself in danger to Shaul. It's tangled, and it's actually being highlighted by the fact that we introduce the relationship smack in the middle of Shaul's relationship with David. You follow? I like that idea. But Abarbanel and Rav Bazak float another idea, also within the literary way of looking at this, which is it's a contrast between Shaul's reaction to David and Yehonatan's reaction to David. We're highlighting the difference in their approaches. Take a look at Abarbanel first in source number 4. He says, Im heyot Shaul bota chakira, Shaul investigates. Who is this guy? Who's his father? Where's he from? Hine Yonatan lo chakar klal. Yonatan does not investigate at all. Aval nafsho nikshura benevish David. He's immediately tied to him. He's head over heels. David Shaul is like, who is he? And we're highlighting the contrast by putting them together. And then Rav Bazak does something that's very sharp. To be fair, I did it too, but he published on it. He says in source number 5, he says, look at the back and forth that's presented in the text between Shaul's reaction and Yehonatan's reaction. Source number 5, in an article, David Beveit Shaul. Bemsheich hakatuv, anu nitkalim b'mivne miyuchad. In the rest of the text, meaning in this section, we encounter a unique structure. Hapiska kolelet shnei teorim hamiyatzgim yachas shonele David. This section is going to give us two descriptions of relationships with David, but the relationships are different. Maaseh Yonatan mitzad echad, mitzad sheni, maasav shel Shaul. Yonatan on one, Shaul and Shaul on the other. Beshlav zeh, terem hechel Shaul legalot uyanut, klapei David. At this stage, Shaul has yet to show his suspicion of David. That uyanut word is going to be oyein at David, is coming up in the psukim in a little bit. But Shaul has not yet demonstrated suspicion for David. Aval ha-mikra matzig ba'ofen mishulav, zeh l'umat zeh et tguvato shel Yonatan l'masav shel David, ha-mevatat avat nefesh, l'bein tguvato shel Shaul, ha-menatzila David l'tzrachav. He says, even though Shaul is not shown yet to dislike or distrust David, nonetheless, his reaction is very different from the reaction that David has, from the reaction that Yonatan has. Go back to the psukim, go back to the sentences, and see this, see this for yourself. In sentence one, and this is what Rav Bazak is talking about here. In sentence one, David finishes speaking, Yehonatan loves him like himself. Sentence two, Shaul takes him, and especially if you read that as takes him for his army. In sentence three, Yehonatan makes a brit with David because he loves him. And he gives him, in sentence four, his tunic, and he gives him his armor, and he gives him his weapons. And then in sentence five, Shaul says, David, you're going to work for me in my army. Yehonatan is giving and loving. Shaul is taking. And the highlight of this, the way that demonstrates this most explicitly, is when we find out that David's not allowed to leave. Right? He may be beloved, but he's in a cage. He won't let him go home. That's not a positive state for somebody to be in. So a lot of different ways to look at the fact that we're introducing Yehonatan with Shaul's reaction. It could be it's just when it happened. It could be that David's words to Shaul, talking about being Yishai's son, resonate with Yehonatan, like Mitzudat David said, and lead to his affection. It could be that it's in order to demonstrate the fact that these relationships are tangled, and Yehonatan, Shaul, David are all interacting at the same time in different ways. And it could be, as Rav Bazak says, that it's presented here in order to highlight how Shaul reacts taking David, taking from David, and Yehonatan reacts wanting to give to David. Ricky.
Is there any chance that Shaul is a little envious of the reaction if he witnesses anything or sees the spark? Is a little envious because he would like David to like him, to support him, and he's envious of his son.
So we don't find that expressed. We do find it expressed that he's envious of everybody else's reaction. It's interesting, though, going back also to Claudette's point about the possibilities in terms of that relationship of David and Yehonatan and Shaul, and the idea that he sees Yehonatan in David. It's not in the text, but you do have to wonder. Yes, Claudette.
Maybe Shaul is thinking, I never keep my enemy close to me.
Oh, we're getting there. We're not there yet, but we're going to get to that later in the chapter. Yeah. So, let's look more at this relationship. Now that we've looked at when it's introduced. Yes, Ethi.
At this point, Shaul is not resentful to David, because he doesn't know that David is going to be his replacement. The people have not hailed David yet. That's in the next sukkim. So at this point, Shaul he saw that this guy is a gibor, and he's drafting him to be over a bunch of soldiers.
So the answer is maybe, because we also said when we saw how Shaul reacts to David going out to Goliath, that it could be that Shaul has a sense that this is Re'acha Tov Mimecha, that this is the one who's better than him, who Hashem is going to prefer. But we'll see. It's a good question when Shaul comes to this realization. So I want to talk about how their souls or their nefashot are tied together. That's a powerful expression. I know at least some of you know where this expression appears elsewhere in Tanakh. Yes, Ricky.
It's not in Tanakh, but when my daughter got married, they had the phrase, Matzati Sheava Nafshi.
Well, that's a very nice pasuk from Shir HaShirim, but...
It has a Nafshi.
Right, but...
It's a father and a child.
Yes, it is.
Binyamin
and Yaakov. Very good. Right, Agnes got it. I gave you a reference to it in source number 6 for anyone who wants to look it up. The Torah says, V'nafsho kishura v'nafsho. Yehuda describes it. His soul is bonded with his soul. So what does it mean? So commentators assume, I think rightly, that this is more than appreciation. It expresses a deep bond. And here they draw on comments from the Rambam. The Rambam is not talking about Yehonatan and David. He's talking about a Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, in source number 7, Mishnah in the first parak, which says, Asei lecha rav, ukne lecha chaver. Right? Make for yourself a mentor, and ukne lecha chaver. And the Rambam, like many who comment on this Mishnah, is bothered by the word ukne. Kne is a form of kinyan. Kinyan is a transaction. Kne lecha chaver sounds like buy a friend. Why are you buying friends? Generally speaking, buying friends doesn't mean you've gained friends. So what exactly is kne lecha chaver? So the Rambam builds on an idea framed by Aristotle, and he actually will quote Aristotle in part of his commentary here. Take a look at source number 7. I was really tempted to not translate this because it's long, but then I thought, you know what? It's a good piece and worth translating, and I'll probably use it on a source sheet for some other shiur anyway. So take a look at source number 7, and we'll just go through my English translation because it's a lot of text. It expressed this as transaction, kne, not saying make a friend for yourself, right? It says asei lecha rav. It doesn't say asei lecha chaver. It doesn't say join with friends, hitchaber lachaverim. And it knows that term as well, because we have another Mishnah that says, al titchaber larasha, don't join with a wicked person. It doesn't say join with friends and the like. This means that one should acquire a friend for himself in any way necessary, so that all of his affairs will be set right. In other words, your friend is not going to be somebody who approves of everything you do. You're not getting a yes person. Rather, you're supposed to get somebody who will help you make sure that what you do will be good. And he quotes you the line from the Gemara, O Chavra, in the Gemara it's Chavrusa, O Misusa, either friendship or death. And if he doesn't find a friend, he needs to work for it, even persuading him to friendship at first, until he becomes a friend. You may have to work at it. You may have to pull the person along. And he should not stop pursuing the friend's wishes until his friendship strengthens. And he quotes what he calls Anshei HaMusar, and I translate inadequately as men of instruction. But Anshei HaMusar is such a better phrase. When you join, meaning when you join with somebody else, do not join according to your own attributes, but join according to your friend's attributes. And when each friend follows this instruction, each of them will intend to complete his friend's wishes, and both will intend the same thing, without a doubt. How great is Aristotle's statement, a friend is another who is you, right? It's another of yourself. Now, people will tell me that the best friendships involve complementary people with complementary interests and not that it's the same person. I'm not debating and discussing types of friendship now. I'm trying to show you what the Rambam does with it. And what the Rambam believes is that the ideal form of friendship is one in which you share a set of positive ideals, you pursue those ideals together, and you help each other in pursuit of those positive ideals. That's what the Rambam is going for here. This kind of ideological, philosophical growth that you will share. And then he says, he's going to break down for us the different kinds of friendships. He says, there are three kinds of friends. There are friends of benefit, where they benefit from each other. Friends of satisfaction and friends of stature. Friends of benefit are like two joint partners, right? Like in a business. And the friendship of a king and his soldiers. So in a business, you have a managing partner, and you have an investing partner. And the investing partner is going to benefit, because the managing partner is going to be the one who's going to make the money actually grow. And the managing partner is going to benefit from the investing partner, because he gives him capital. But the two of them are just friends, in the sense that they are allies, gaining something from each other. Or a king and his soldiers. So the king likes his soldiers. Why? Because his soldiers fight for him. Friends of satisfaction are of two kinds. Friends of pleasure and friends of security. What do you mean? Friends of pleasure are like the friendship of males to females and the like. Friends of pleasure, as far as he is concerned, is a reference to people who are going to get something from the other. You could talk about Platonic relationships some other time. The Rambam is not interested. Friends of security is for one to have a friend he trusts. Sorry, I wrote security there. That's interesting. Oh, no, the Rambam did it. It's not me. Friends of security is for one to have a friend he trusts. He does not keep any deed or speech from him and reveals to him all of his matters, the attractive and the ugly. Through this, he will find great satisfaction in his speech and in his friendship. So these are all different kinds of friendship. You've got friends where we each work to benefit the other, like the business partners. We have friends who are just pursuing pleasure that they provide for each other. You have friends of security. You have somebody you feel safe with. And then you get to what he considers the ideal. Ohev hama'ala, the lover of stature. What's the best way for this to be? Is for both of them to desire and intend one goal, which is to accomplish that which is good. Each wants to be aided with the other, or to aid the other. I'm not sure which way to read the words in the Hebrew. Lehe azer b'chaveiro. For both of them to achieve that good together. This is the friend whom the Mishnah instructs us to acquire. This is the friendship of the Rebbe for the student and the student for the Rebbe, in which everybody's goal is to work towards the good and to amplify the other one's success in achieving that which is good. You follow? There's a lot of text here, and none of it involves David and Yehonatan. But what the Rambam says here is that the ideal form of friendship is when the parties are helping each other towards ideological growth. And the commentators take the Rambam's formulation and apply it to David and Yehonatan. So take a look at source number 8 to see how Abarbanel does it. He says, and I'm going to read again in my English translation in the interest of time. And he loved him like his own spirit, meaning that his love was not the love of the sweet, like the love of youths, or the love of the beneficial, but the love of the good, because it is good. And because this love is associated with spiritual completeness, it said, and he loved him like his spirit. meaning that Yonatan loved David according to the level of David's spirit, or that he loved him like Yonatan loved his own spirit. By the way, if you're confused about the fact that Abarbanel keeps going back and forth between Yonatan and Yehonatan, I am too. But he does. And I just translate as he goes. I don't think it's intentional. I think probably this was done by someone who was transcribing his text at some point. I don't think this was his own thing. But the point is still the same, whether it says Yonatan or whether it says Yehonatan, which is that the love between them, he says, is just because they see ideological good in each other, therefore they bond with each other. And then he gives you a quote from Seneca, the Roman. I'm not really clear on how it ties into anything. I just brought it here because it's at the end of his paragraph anyway, where he says that the true lover, or the one who loves, is the one who loves the essence of the person. Sorry, the true lover is one who loves the essence of the person. And like here, he loved him like his own spirit. I think he's making a separate point, but I'm not sure what it is.
I keep seeing, feeling the word nefesh as essence. I didn't read this line below, but it's just exactly how I've been feeling. When I try to translate nefesh, I really feel it's the essence of consciousness, it's the ideas, it's everything that makes a person, and you find the reflection of that person in you, or the other way around. So that's why I like, this is great that he uses the word essence.
Right, he says etzem ha'adam.
The essence, it's like yes. You sense something in a person who is your
right. I hear you.
Mother.
I hear you. So Abarbanel is also seeing this kind of higher level of love that they experience, recognizing the good in each other. And Malbim goes further and takes us back to something we said a few weeks back when I commented to you that I think David reminds me of Yehonatan in terms of his faith, his bitachon, his emunah, his impulse to act on it. So look at Malbim in source number 9. Rotzelomar Shelo hayta ahavat ha'arev o hamo'il. Again, this is not the love of the sweet. It's not the love of the beneficial. Rak ahavat atzmit, ahava atzmiyit, he says, she'ahav hatov es hatov. It's the good loving the good. Vaisaha ahava kenafsho. It is as his own spirit. Shehi ha'ahava ha'aza she'en lamala mimena. It is the most powerful form of love. The good loving the good because it is good. That's the idea. Yes, Leona. You're muted.
Okay, no. I just had to find the mouse to get unmuted. I don't know if it has any significance, but in Pasuk Dalet that we're reading,
yeah,
where Yonatan, there's two things that confuse, well, not confuse me, kind of make me wonder. He gives his armor and everything to David.
Yep.
The last time somebody tried to was Shaul.
Yes. We're gonna get to that.
Shaul he rejected.
Yep.
But he accepts this.
Yep.
And there's an interesting play on words perhaps with the word yitvashet, which means of course to take his clothes, but there are other shorashim in there. Yitvashet is to spread out, to open yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
And Pashut is simplified.
Yes.
So there's a juxtaposition there, I think, of the word included in the, that he removed his garments. What else was he spreading out or giving out? Was that a symbol of something that David recognized?
Right. It's an interesting idea. I'll tell you to hold on to it till next week when we're going to get to that Pasuk. Because, yeah. Sorry, no, we're not. We're still in Nafshok Shrub and Nafsho. We're not in that pasuk yet. So what we've seen so far on this is that their souls are bonded together. That commentators see it as a higher, pure love of that which is good and that which they share in that regard. So I think the commentators may be drawing not only on our text, but also on a Mishnah Pirkei Avot, which does mention Yehonatan and David. Take a look at source number 10. Mishnah says, Kol ahava shitzluya badavar, all love that depends on something, batel davar, bitela ahava. When that which it depends on stops, the love stops as well. Vishe'inatzluya badavar, and if it doesn't depend on something specific, eina batela leolam, then it'll never cease, because it's not dependent on anything. Ezohi ahava tzluya badavar, can you give me an example of love that depends on something? Yeah. Zu ahavat Amnon v'Tamar. Amnon and Tamar. And for those who don't know that horrific story which shapes much of Shmuel Bet, that's Amnon raping his half-sister Tamar. He is so enamored, he loves her, until he does this to her, and after that he can't stand her. The v'she'inat tluya badavar, what is love that does not depend on something? Zu ahavat David v'Yehonatan. That's the love of David and Yehonatan. So this places their relationship as a model for love that's not dependent on anything. It's just he's good, and they're enamored of that in each other. However, we have to ask two questions, and it's already 2:27. So I'm going to mention the two questions. We'll do the first one. And the second one, which is what everybody wants to talk about, we'll have to wait with. And this is your punishment for asking good questions. So the two questions are this. Number one, is Yehonatan's love truly sincere, the way it sounds in this Mishnah? And number two, does David love Yehonatan as well? Is this love reciprocated? So in terms of the first question, because that's the one that we're going to get to do today, is Yehonatan's love truly sincere? Can you make the argument that it is not? Not that you'd want to, but can you?
Yes.
Yeah, how?
First of all, it's too soon. Love is I was going to ask you what they mean here by love. But love is a very strong emotion. And they really don't know each other. To suddenly love at first sight, and I just mean between two people.
Yes.
Yeah, you know what I'm trying to say.
Yes, I do.
Anyway, so when they love each other, that's kind of like romantic fairy tale. So how do they know they love each other without knowing each other, without spending time, talk, and all that other stuff?
Okay. So Susan says it can't be because they haven't had time to build up a relationship. He doesn't really know him yet. I'm going to take Ricky's comment. I'm going to make one comment, and we'll pick up with it next time. Ricky, go ahead. Sorry, Ruth.
Also, Yonatan might want to be friends with David because he knows of his position in Shaul's court or Shaul's estimation.
So, interesting. Ricky floats the idea that Yonatan knows David as a rising star, and maybe he's trying to yoke himself to the rising star. So that's something that we are going to come back to because we're going to see in coming chapters as the relationship plays out, Yehonatan is going to say, I'm going to be your second in command as king. So is there, and Ralbag is going to say there is some potential benefit in it for Yehonatan is something that we need to discuss. So I'm leaving the jury out on that one. So we have a lot to talk about. What we've accomplished today is we fleshed out more about the loves of David in general, as well as that very important point from Susan Ackerman about love being expressed one way in the relationships in general in Tanakh, and not mentioning it for both. We have a sense of why we throw in Yehonatan with the interaction with Shaul at the same time. We give different explanations for that. My favorite is still that it's in order to show that you can't really extract them from each other. The relationships are mingled and mixed. And the idea that Yehonatan's love for David is sincere and is not dependent on anything, which the Rambam gives you Aristotle as and his ideas of love and Abarbanel and Malbim incorporate it, but I think they're really building on that mission in Pirkei Avot, which says that the love is pure, notwithstanding potential benefits for Yehonatan in it. So what I want to do next time is examine this question of, does David love Yehonatan as well? is there that two-way love that that we would like to see in this relationship? Then talk about the Brit. What was this pact that they made between them? And then to talk about the symbolism of giving the clothing and the armor and David accepting it and that Vayit Pashet. And then we'll be able to move on from there. So a good chunk of next time is probably on David and Yehonatan as well. Thank you very much.
Are we going to get to that grammatical?